our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Just gonna say we're two pretty burly dudes. I don't know if we need to be out on the same limb, Chuck.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Now you are more than welcome to tell me which brand of hallucinogen you believe
I'm on. I don't know. You seem pretty lucid, so.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. This is our podcast that usually comes out on Wednesday morning. And unlike most podcasts, instead of having our lively and somewhat scatterbrained but wonderful companion, Ben Brennis, with us, we do not tonight. Tonight, it is just me and one Evan Peterson. So, Evan Peterson, why don't you go get the logistics out of the way, tell people where you can be reached, and how you are doing this evening.
I'm doing phenomenal. I find it weird that you call Ben the scatterbrained one and not myself, because he's the one that tries to keep us on track anyways. But I'm doing great. Sorry he couldn't be with us. I hope he's feeling better. You can find me on the Twitter machine at EvFWFB. You can find me on this podcast throughout the baseball season. You can find me on the football podcast, where I'll be joining my best friend ever, Ben Brennis, and I believe Eric Mackey. Is that how you say his name? I haven't had the chance to work with Eric yet, so that'll be interesting. But looking forward to doing this, looking forward to doing that, and just happy to be here with you, Chuck.
Well, there you go. For those of you who don't know who I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. Coming off busy, crazy weekends, we've got kind of an interesting lineup of show topics to discuss tonight. The first of which is a conundrum kind of question that Evan has sort of dulled down and made less profane than we've heard it before. And I believe it's drop it, pop it, and lock it.
Yep, you got that correct. You are a very funky man.
I am a funky man. That was the name of one of my fantasy football teams last year that had the Lockett guy from Seattle on it.
Tyler Lockett?
Yeah, when his knee broke. So I called it, dropped it, dropped him, popped it, locked it, something like that. But anyway, and the point being is we're going to go over some pitchers that we haven't really talked about a lot on this show. And then we're going to decide, and I'll have Evan, when I get to him on this subject, explain exactly what the qualifiers are going to be, so I know exactly how to answer the question. But the first pitcher that we're going to talk about is, we haven't really talked a lot about Dylan Bundy. Dylan Bundy, of course, is a Baltimore Orioles starter that was much hyped, considered the number one prospect in baseball for a short period of time, and then injuries hit, and then he burst back onto the scene last year. But he had kind of an uneven season in 2016. This season started off pretty well, but with underwhelming peripherals. And lately, he's sort of been leveling off with some blow-up starts. So I don't know exactly what to make of Dylan Bundy. He has a 3.73 ERA and a 1.22 whip. He only has two starts in his last eight, where he's got more than 1K per inning. He has five starts in his last eight, with three-plus walks allowed. He does have eight wins, pitching in the very tough AL East. And now you can describe for me, Evan, exactly which classification is which and how you feel about one Dylan Bundy.
Yeah, I feel like it would have been important to discuss the game. So it was an idea that I had, and like most of my ideas, it's a mishmash of certain things and a whole lot of craziness, but hey, maybe it accounts for something. So So we'll start from the top. Lockett is, you're throwing him out every time. Don't care the opponent. He's going in your lineup. Popham is, he's going in for certain matchups. You're spot starting him. And then dropping him is, he's just gone, kaput for you. And I was watching Scrubs, and Turk was doing the pop lock and drop it. It all clicked. So as far as Dylan Bundy is concerned, he's had a bad stretch here so far. His last three starts out, he's walked more than two guys, and that matches his total for the rest of the season. He's kind of getting bashed around, and what's interesting about his numbers are not very interesting, but what's nice about his numbers, I guess, is they're right around the level of innings that we saw him pitch on a major league inning or major league level last year. So you can start to kind of make some comparisons. He's not striking out as many guys like you brought up, but he's, you know, been able to tick down the walks just a smidge. Bundy's a pop guy for me. I can see the upside talent for him. You just have to worry about, say, the injuries and the ineffectiveness from a guy who, you know, his road to the majors has been littered with injuries, which can make it hard for a guy to grow. So I think there's still a lot to be seen from Bundy. Now that you understand how to play the game, Chuck, what would you do with Bundy, or what category would you throw him in?
Well, I guess I would have to throw him in the Poppet category, avoiding some of the worst kind of starts that he faces. Then again, in the AL East, I find it hard to believe he's going to get a lot of friendly starts. So I think he's one of those guys where I think if he seems to be running well, then I will increase the amount of places that I will use him, especially if the offense, you know, the Red Sox offense has been streaky. The Yankees are down compared to where they were like a couple weeks ago. So I'm going to have to balance and sort of play a bunch of different variables against each other as to how I'm going to use him. I think most teams have sustained performance issues or enough injury issues that a guy like Dylan Bundy is likely to get started more often than he's going to get sat. But there is going to be some pretty scary starts coming up just by the nature of the beast and the division that he pitches in.
Real quick, just while you're talking about that, I find it interesting as I'm looking at his career stats that he's got 113 innings pitched at home. He's got 97 innings pitched on the road for his career. His ERA at Camden is a full run and a half below what it is on the road. So I'm just curious if you think that that's something that he could continue given his struggles, or do you think that's something that's going to normalize and kind of, you know, blow him up here a little bit?
Well, I think it's likely to normalize. I also think some of it is the fact that his road starts, you know, running into, you know, the new Yankee Stadium and the both the lineup and the odd configuration of Fenway. I think some of it is just his youth right now, where he's just been more comfortable at home. And some of it is the, you know, very unfriendly climates that he has to go to pitch in. You know, this year, even going to Tampa really is no, you know, walk in the park as compared to what it was last year when they struggled more throughout their lineup than they have so far this year. So I think it's likely to normalize over time, but I do think younger pitchers have a tendency to pitch better at home than they do on the road because that comfort and the nerves, I don't think they always have their feet underneath them. And of course, some of it can just be random distribution. Like all of a sudden they can start losing control of one of their pitches and then they've got, you know, three road starts and they don't fare as well. And by the time they get back home, they're starting to control it. So I think that's a hard stat. I guess I didn't really answer the question, but I guess that's a hard stat to really diagnose, especially with a younger pitcher. Does that suffice as an answer for you, my friend?
Well, I mean, and I don't think it's anything that you could have said for certain. And I do agree with you that part of it may be just kind of a comfortable feeling at home. But Camden is kind of one of those things that when you're taking a look at, say, like, you know, visiting DFS plays or things like that, it's a park that we worry about. So it's just a thought that I had, is that, you know, maybe he is a home warrior. Maybe it's, you know, random luck and he's going to come crashing down. And I just wanted to see your thoughts.
Well, there we go. Now, the next pitcher that we're going to talk about is on another team that seems to be playing sort of on the same level within their own division as the Orioles, in so much as they're middling, but their record isn't quite as bad as you'd think it would be for, you know, the lowlights of their season. And that's St. Louis Cardinals starting pitcher Lance Lynn. There was a lot of debate. A few times in the drafting season, I had to pick between Lance Lynn and Michael Wacha. And some of the outlets that I go to that really delve into and diagnose pitching seem to be a little bit higher on Waka's stuff than Lance Lynn's. Now, Lance Lynn has had some good stretches this season for sure, but 7 of his last 9 starts, he has not made it through the 5th inning, and he's given up 14 earned runs in his last 2 starts. So he has 79 strikeouts and 84 innings pitched, which is a little better than some of the people that we have on our list tonight. But I am completely enthused to hear exactly what Evan thinks about Lance Lynn going forward. Of the dance move portions, would you like to drop it, pop it, or lock it?
I'm a guy that's been locking him in my lineup, and so I ate all of those 6 home runs over his last, you know, 10-plus innings on the chin, and it hasn't been fun whatsoever. But I do think he's a better pitcher than this. I think he's a little more kind of what he was to start off the season. Maybe not, you know, the 2.7 ERA he was to start off the season before he, you know, absolutely got his shit pushed in. But I think he did get dropped down draft boards. He was a great value. And I do think that the Cardinals are just getting a little unlucky, as you said. Where would you sit on Lance Lynn? Because I know we've kind of talked about him as far as like the Michael Wacha bet, or, you know, is Mike Leake good? So, I mean, we've kind of danced around the issue, but where are you worried about the last 2 starts for Lance Lynn, or do you think it's just a blip on the radar?
I'm pretty concerned. He's got an injury history as well. He's had some pitch mix problems in the past. A lot of people focusing on him really only using 2 of his pitches most of the time. I would not be willing to drop him, but I would be willing to add a 4th category, which would be some sort of sub move that no one ever wants to see me do because I really dance like a white guy. But anyway, I would probably be between pop him and drop him. Because
he'd be like the wallflower, like he's just on the sidelines, but he's not like kicked out of the gymnasium yet.
I need to see something to get a little enthused about. I get a little shell shocked with my starting pitchers, and I suppose there's something to be said against it, because regression says that Lance Lynn is probably going to have some better starts here coming up, because, you know, you can't really start any worse than he has the last 2 games. But I really need to see at least 1 outing where he looks like he's in control of the game and the game's not in control of him.
Yeah.
So I would not be willing to start him right now. My guts still tell me, and I've been getting bashed in the public debates that I've been in with people around my restaurant, etc., that the Cardinals have a run in them, one that will sort of put them in the second wild card discussion, which people think is crazy. But I also think that Colorado or Arizona has a bad run in them. I don't think their team is quite complete enough not to have a really bad stretch, either one of those teams. So I do think that St. Louis is going to surge at some point, and I would not be willing to try and replace Lance Lynn with what I see on most of my waiver wires. But I also would really like to see 1 really solid start or 2 halfway decent starts Before I get too excited, I saw Lynn's next start is against the Diamondbacks. So if you have the guts to start him there.
No, I don't.
Get on with your bad self.
I did that thing where you go through on Monday and just kind of slot in the guys that you want to start for the week in like my head-to-head leagues. And I just breezed right past Lynn on, I think it's Wednesday or Thursday that he pitches. The one thing, and especially in those kind of leagues, cause I play in a lot of quality starts leagues, is he's not going six innings anymore. It's six straight outings where he's failed to reach six innings after a run he had where I think it was 6 of 7, if I counted correctly. I, you know, kind of get lost listening to you talk and trying to keep my thoughts in order. But like I've said multiple times, I'm a Lance Lynn apologist, and I just think there's going to be better outings for him. I don't think the injury is going to hamper him as far as like an innings limit. I don't think it has anything to play into his run of not going six innings. I think it's just he has these like blow up innings, like he's cruising and then he gets derailed, and then it's 95 pitches in the fifth inning and he's got to go. So I think there's better things on the horizon for Lance.
Well, we have to assume that there is, and we have to hope there is, just for the pitching depth landscape aspect that we're sort of hoping for going forward. Now, a pitcher that's near and dear to me, I drafted him all over, and I've gotten this sort of very mixed result-oriented thing. And what I really want to do, and maybe it's in front of you, I hope it isn't, how old do you think Joe Ross is?
Well, I do have it in front of me, and I would have been somewhat close, but I would have thought he was a year older. I would have gotten this wrong.
Okay. Yeah, I thought he was at least 26 or 27. He's only 24 years old. He's got a 5.4 ERA. He's got a 1.48 whip. But he has two or less walks in 8 of his last 9 starts, which I really, really like to see. And he's coming off some dominating starts with a little mini clunker mixed in there. He pitches for the right team, obviously, as far as getting run support, as far as being in the right division in the NL East. So I'm very curious on what your take is on Joe Ross. I made a curious move. I dropped their pitcher who's really been struggling, the guy who they've sent to the bullpen.
Tanner Roark?
I dropped Tanner Roark to pick up Joe Ross when Joe Ross came off the DL, and I kind of felt like a schmuck about that when he struggled in his first couple of outings. Mm-hmm. But he's really picked it up since then. So where are you on Joe Ross going forward here, Evan?
I mean, I kind of feel like a schmuck on Ross. I picked him up in a league after the 12 strikeout game, and then he got busted for 5 runs, and I threw him right back out on the wire. He's had 2 fantastic starts. The one thing I noticed as I was kind of sifting through some of his numbers, and maybe there's something to do with this fun bit of trivia, did you know that before this year, Joe Ross had never given up a home run to anybody the first time through the order? And this year he has 6. Like, I think that's just maybe kind of random happenstance, but it's definitely inflated his first time through the lineup numbers to over 300. Last year it was 220. I think there's better things on the horizon for Joe Ross, and I'm definitely in the same camp as being a pro Joe Ross person. I didn't really understand like why he was in the minors for so long this year. I think there's better things for Ross. And I probably have him. I mean, if you're creating levels in between drop and pop, like, do I need to create one between pop and lock? Because I think that's kind of where Joe would be for me. If that makes any sense.
I like how we're diverging the game, but I also want to mention to you that stat that you just came up with is one of the reasons that I love you, Evan. I would not have noticed a stat like that, but it is a very interesting and curious stat. Not one that I'm prepared to try and explain.
299 batters the first time through the lineup Joe Ross saw before 2017, didn't give up one home run. He saw 90 of them this year and gave up 6. It's just a weird thing, and that's what I'm here for.
Well, the other thing about this is that, you know, both Lance Lynn and Joe Ross and Dylan Bundy has suffered through a lot of injuries throughout his career. So there's these are guys that are really coming back from injuries frequently. And so that would be my self-made excuse, because I need Joe Ross so badly in these leagues that I'm suddenly surging in, back into contention, back into the money in a couple leagues. So I've always had a belief in Joe Ross, and the fact that many people speculated that Joe Ross had better stuff than his brother when, you know, Joe Ross first popped onto the scene. And I've just been hoping that he could get all the way back to healthy and be that guy. And, you know, the Nats showed a lot of faith in him last year by bringing him in down the stretch and having him pitch some important games towards the end of the season last year. So organizationally, I think the Nats believe in him. He's a Lockett guy for me. He's not between phases. He's a Lockett guy for me. I'm going to throw him in and believe in him. The general consensus on Ross is that Ross needs to do better against left-handed hitting. He doesn't seem to have the right pitches to get left-handed hitters out. So it will be curious, and I will sort of monitor from afar how well he does against lineups that have left-handed hitters that could really, really hurt him. But I am a Joe Ross fan, and I'm willing to lock Joe Ross into my lineup.
Yeah, once again, if just because you brought up his left-handed numbers, if you want to do another crazy home run thing, he'd given up 8 home runs to left-handed hitters before this year. He's given up 7 this year in 123 batters faced. So things are just not going right for Ross, and But I'm with you in that I'm more confident, but I just can't take him to lock status. It's a bold move, Cotton.
That's me. I'm bold. All right. Anyway, the thing that I want to talk about next is one Scott Feldman. Do you know the age of Scott Feldman offhand? Would you have gotten this right?
I have Scott Feldman's page pulled up, but it's right below his like biography stuff. I would say probably 33.
Well, you are doing very well at this game. He's 34. Okay. I thought he was a little bit younger than that for some reason. Although I did know he's been around. 4.07 ERA, 1.32 WHIP. Now he's had a little upswing here recently. Now, he's had 5 road starts in his last 8. Although a couple of those road starts weren't all that friendly, including the one he's coming off of, which was a 7 innings pitch, 2 earned runs, 5 strikeout start at the Washington Nationals, which is a heck of a good start. I am in my deep 16 team league, in which Evan and I are both in. I am trotting him out there these days and getting pretty fortunate. Do you have any interest in joining me on this limb and trusting Scott Feldman, or do you think I need to put my crack pipe down? What do you think?
Well, I was just going to say we're two pretty burly dudes. I don't know if we need to be out on the same limb, Chuck, but I'm not in the Feldman boat with you. I don't know if it's the age or, and I mean, he's got these crazy. He threw a shutout already this year. He's going deep into games. I'm not really worried about Great American Ballpark and the just because home runs are so crazy. Who cares if he's actually healthy? He's out there throwing starts and he's got these, kind of blow ups here and there. I think you have to be, like you're saying, deep 16 team territory. I'm not messing around with him, and probably anything under a 12 team league and a 14 team league, only if you're sharing the crack pipe. But I would not go anywhere near Feldman if I was saying it on a podcast. So no.
Well, his K rate is not completely unusable. And like I said, even despite the fact that he's had some road starts, one of them I believe was at Tampa Bay and his last one was at the Nationals. So those are pretty unfriendly environments to pitch in. And he's getting who's getting quite a bit of run support early in the year. I'm going to be curious as to if the Reds can sustain, you know, especially last year, Duvall really struggled. Now all of a sudden you have Billy Hamilton in a much ballyhooed funk himself. So it is going to be curious to see exactly how this all unfolds. But in a time of massive need, Scott Feldman has come through for me, and he hasn't really gotten shellacked the way that you are concerned that he might with this, the way that he sort of floated around the league in recent years. So unlike Joe Ross and Lance Lynn and Mr. Bundy, who have had injury concerns, the thing with Scott Feldman is I'm hoping for a renaissance. And aren't we all hoping for a renaissance in the big picture? Wouldn't it be fun to live through something called a renaissance, Evan?
Yeah, if you're telling me that a guy that was drafted in the 30th round of the 2003 draft is going to come through and, you know, propel you to a fantasy title, then that's a Renaissance fair I want to go to. And you would definitely be the king, Chuck.
That is true. I would not have the right outfit for it, and but I'm fat enough to wear even Henry VIII's clothes. So there's a lot of possibilities for me in the costuming part of this whole shenanigan.
Hey man, chubby and pale, we would have been royalty like 500 years ago.
Exactly, and like or we could like always go to Japan where they, you know, they worship sumo wrestlers or something.
Oh,
which is a really unfair statement to you, by the way, because you are quite more on the younger and buff side than I am, sir. So anyway, we're
wow.
Well, you know, maybe it's just a good angle or something. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to our next little activity for the evening. And this one was more orchestrated by me. And as most of this podcast, we're doing this kind of on the improv, if you will. But I thought it would be kind of interesting. We have a four-sport league that many of us at Friends with Fantasy four-sport. A three-sport league that many of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits are in. And it drafts in like a month. And so I thought it would be an interesting activity to do a little preview, a little two-man weave, since I used to play basketball. Did you play basketball when you were younger, Evan?
I did. It was the worst experience of my life. I hated every minute of it. So sorry that I don't have better stories to tell you, Chuck.
That's okay. The pumpkin pushing wasn't meant for everyone, that's for sure. So anyway, the point being is that we're going to do a little two-man weave, and we're going to go through a mock draft of the first two rounds as to how we would draft players for next baseball season. And we're going to do this in a pretty methodical way, meaning that, you know, that since obviously poor Evan getting thrown under the bus here is going to need a little time for some of this, I wrote down heads or tails, and we're going to flip for who has the first pick. And when we make a pick, we're going to expound a little bit about what's going through our skulls. So would you like heads or tails? If you win the flip, you get the first pick.
Tails never fails.
All right. Well, I wrote down an H, so it either failed you or helped you in this case.
It can only help.
Okay. Well, at number one, I mean, I know this is podcasting drama if I've ever heard it. But at number one, I'm going to put Mike Trout, feeding off the fact that he was pretty phenomenal and basically threw the Angels offense up on his back until he got hurt earlier this year. He is going to miss some time. He won't be coming off one of his best statistical seasons as far as, you know, his counting stats are concerned. But boy, I love the fact that when he's out there, you seem to get as good a quality of play as anyone could possibly imagine. And he helps in all the categories. As I've said before, you need a ton of outfielders. And this is a 12-team mock. You need a ton of outfielders in roto leagues. And I think starting your draft out with Mike Trout gives you a lot of directions you can go thereof.
So, oh, man, you sniped me.
I did. I imagine I did snipe you, actually. So, you know, this is where our thoughts are probably going to diverge a little bit, which will make this more amusing. But confirm or deny that you're okay with Trout at one, and then let me know where you would go at two.
Absolutely confirm. I don't really, you know, care about the injury. Does it play into your thoughts at all?
Not really, although until then we kind of thought maybe he was like a cyborg or something. So, I mean, I was concerned about him getting hurt. And he certainly got hurt on the most innocent of plays for a man who's who's basically done Herculean feats with ease on the baseball diamond before. But it doesn't really play in for me. I think you got to expect a little wear and tear out of a guy at some point.
Absolutely. With the second pick in the draft, I love Paul Goldschmidt, and I think, is this an OBP league? I mean, we didn't really specify any of this, but let's just put it this way. Goldie's on his way to outpace the best season he's ever had by a ton. He's already at 68 runs, 65 RBI, 18 dingers, 13 swipes. He's got a 447 on base. That's pretty good, and I mean, this lineup has been missing AJ Pollock. They've seen a lot of revolution. I was pitting him up against Bryce Harper, would have probably been the other guy if we would have set an OBP league. The steals, I don't think, are going to fall off for Goldie, and I mean, maybe if this is the point you want to have a conversation about whether or not the shallow first base panic we were talking about, you know, prior to this season is going to continue over, or if it was just kind of a panic reaction. Goldie's my guy at two.
Well, we did not diverge. I also had Goldschmidt at number two. And I do want to mention that the depth at first base is going to really come down to sort of a leap of faith for next year. You know, do you believe in the Ryan Zimmerman, Yonder Alonso, you know, all these, you know, Matt Davidson, I mean, blah, 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 all these different depth guys that suddenly have popped up out of nowhere. You know, if you really believe in those guys next year, then maybe you can be talked into passing on somebody like Goldschmidt. I cannot. I especially in the first two rounds, really, when a guy I think is supreme in his ability, I really don't want to pass on him for positional considerations. So Goldschmidt would definitely be my guy on at two as well. Then at three, sounds like we're not going to diverge yet, but we will diverge soon. There's a little dramatic irony for the people out there, because I'm sure that we differ here very soon. But at three, I do have Bryce Harper. The fact that he's hitting 330, the fact that his temperament seems to be, be mellowing to an extent that takes one of the fears away. He's also been healthy for most of this year. The reason that I can't put Harper in front of Goldschmidt is because I'm afraid of the performance swings have been a little bit too recent. You know, at his worst stretches, he's been so much worse than what Goldschmidt has been in recent years. So I do definitively believe that Harper should go after Goldschmidt, but this is one heck of a consolation prize, considering if he ever puts the complete package together, he's going to be a ridiculous, ridiculous player. So I will go with Bryce Harper at three, and you can confirm or deny that and move forward, my friend.
Well, as you know, I had kind of, you know, debated out, and you know, I was already thinking about him. The one thing I think will be interesting to watch in the second half is kind of how the speed plays out. Is he going to come back to anywhere close to the 21 steals that he had last year? And it's something that I've talked about in certain spots about the number of months that Bryce Harper has hit five home runs. And I know they're arbitrary endpoints and there's injuries that play into it. He's kind of tailed off a little bit in the power this month. He also in the run department, I was looking at his splits here. He actually scored more runs in April than he has in May and June combined so far. Now, I think the Nationals lineup is still pretty awesome, and I think the counting statistics are still going to be there for him. But I think it's a solid pick. At four, I'm going Kershaw. The pitching landscape is disgusting. I don't care whatever slide off there's been in Kershaw's game, which, I mean, it's not a lot, it's still elite, and he's still better than anybody. If I'm throwing a pitcher out there, I want his name to be Clayton Kershaw, and that's all I have to say about that.
Well, while I don't mind that, and I strongly debated on putting him there, I do have someone ahead of him, and speaking of a topical discussion, I think when I average everything out and I look at how things seem to be trending, I see, you know, and this is comparing Cadillacs, obviously, and I am the jump on pitching guy of all guys, but I will take Max Scherzer at 5. I like a little bit more of the consistency, and I like the fact that he has been a little bit healthier than Kershaw over the last couple years. And I realize that this is a matter of much debate, but I would much rather, I think I would rather have a pitcher in the NL East going forward than in the NL West, although it's close. And it's definitely splitting hairs. So I had Scherzer at 4 and Kershaw at 5.
Wow.
So this is the first time I got to jump up and take Scherzer. And I'm fine taking him there. And now you can tell me that I'm overreacting.
Wow.
If you would like.
I mean, first of all, as the whole thing for pitching in the NL East versus over the NL West, like, I get it. There's, you know, a big division split there. But, oh, man, I don't think these home run issues for Kershaw are really anything that anybody needs to worry about. You're not worried about Max at all. I mean, Kershaw's logged a ton of innings, but holy crap, so has Max recently. I'll put whatever board bet you want on next year. Kershaw over Scherzer. Wow, I was completely taken aback by the fact that you would say that you would take Scherzer ahead of Kershaw. Didn't you tell me this preseason that you were the guy that never drafts pitching in the first round?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned on the Wednesday podcast a number of times, is that that is definitely changing directions next year. And you'll know this by the end of this mock draft. This will be very, very apparent that I am definitely pushing the upper tier of pitching much higher than I ever have before. And I know it stuns people because I think people are in the habit of just automatically putting Kershaw as the number one pitcher. And I get that to a large extent because he's had some of the most ridiculous seasons, you know, all the Cy Youngs, et cetera. And he's been on a very good team to boot. But at the same time, some of these, the dominating strikeout performances of Scherzer, and I think his performance arc seems to be going up for me. Like, I just think he's getting better and better each year yet. And I think Kershaw, having started at such a younger age, seems to be leveling off some, which is a completely ridiculous thing to say at one level because, you know, these guys are still, I think, clearly the number one and the number two pitcher. I just playing off a trend and playing off my gut and thinking to myself that I would prefer Scherzer. So now that I got Scherzer at 5, things will continue to get pretty interesting because I wonder who Evan wants at 6.
It's an interesting thing, and I've been like just very angry over this point. And maybe this is cheating in the sense of what you're trying to accomplish here, but it depends on which site you play on. Is this Anthony Rizzo at second base thing actually a thing? Like, let's say, I don't know which site you guys play on for your three-sport league. Which site is that?
ESPN.
Oh, okay. So is the Rizzo, he already has it in Yahoo leagues?
Well, I think he's got in-season.
Yeah,
but I don't believe he has what would qualify as next season in most leagues.
Okay, which I mean, we're halfway through the season, and if he's already, I mean,
yep.
If he is second base eligible in your leagues next year, he should go here as a second baseman who is going to smack you 30 home runs and steal you 10 bases and hit in the middle of a fantastic Cubs lineup that I know has kind of been, you know, off kilt this year, but I think is still going to produce into the future. I would have no problem buying into Rizzo as a first, second base guy. He's like Daniel Murphy that steals and is better and, you know, a little better looking, but that's it.
Well, I can see that. I don't think that I'm quite willing to go there yet. I've always had an interesting take that I haven't heard from anyone else on Anthony Rizzo. Going into last year, I was pretty concerned about the fact that Rizzo got hit by so many pitches. And if you look at how he bats, it's a natural end result of the fact that he's obviously a beast and his hands are right over the dish, basically, when he hits. It reminds me a lot of Jeff Bagwell. Since I'm an old guy, I remember when Jeff Bagwell used to put his hands right out over the plate. Well, you can't live only away, so pitchers start pitching in. Well, the hit-by-pitches have come back this year. And last year, I know I was happy because his HBPs went down, I believe, well over 50%. And this year, the hit-by-pitches are back. And that concerns me to some extent. And then to another extent, there's just players I like. This gets to sort of a versatility of speed and power question for me with where I'm at. So I wouldn't be stunned that Rizzo went there. I had Rizzo at 12. So
first rounder. But yeah. I guess I value, like I said, the second base thing. He's taken more walks than he struck out this year, which, I mean, he was kind of not reaching those levels, but, I mean, that's always been a kind of strength of his. And like I said, I just think if you're getting 30 and 10 out of your second baseman, like, I think it's better than Altuve, probably, which saying that you have Rizzo at 12 probably means that you don't feel the same way if they're both second base. Correct.
Yeah, I mean, I don't naturally think of Rizzo as a second baseman, and I also think there's at least an outside chance that these sites are going to reconsider.
True. I wasn't trying to screw up your exercise here, but
no, and we're trying to soothsay here, which of course you know doesn't necessarily help. But you know, in my three sport league, there's going to be some. You know, some prophesying going on, if you will, which is probably not the right form of that word. And I'm an English major, so I should be a little upset with myself right now, but I'm not. And so I'm gonna move on. I believe it is my pick, right? At 7, I will have the person who I have at 6, which is a player that I still very much believe in, and that is one Mookie Betts. Now, you know, a lot of people going into this year questioned if the power was for real and if the stolen bases were going to be for real. Well, a lot of his numbers look pretty good. You know, the 12 home runs is about where you thought he would be at, but you didn't suspect that the average home run output per major leaguer right now would be like 17 or 18, which I'm only halfway kidding. So, and also, I think people will sort of question this because he's only hitting .266, even though he's got a .343 OBP. But the 12 stolen bases is a nice bonus. I believe in sort of a bounce back effect by next year. I think Boston will bolster its offense between the end of this year and the offseason. And despite the fact that he's on a down year, I don't think I could pass up Mookie Betts at pick number 7. So how do you feel about Mookie Betts there? I'm to the point where I'm taking somebody who's maybe not as statistically sound as some other picks I could make here. How do you feel about Mookie Betts there? You think way out of line? Or
I mean, Betts' season, he had the slow start. It's kind of weighted by this amazing May that he had. I like that you went Betts where you did, because it allows us to have the conversation that I felt like we were going to have. I thought maybe you might have another player in between here. But for the sake of argument, and it might be reaching up just a smidge for him, Charlie Blackmon, who I think is going to be a very interesting name if you're at draft tables next season and you're at this kind of spot where you're looking to take an outfielder. And I do agree that it's Trout and Harper up at the top. I have Blackmon as my third outfielder, and I don't know if you feel terribly about that or if you feel it's more of a coin flip, but yeah, he's who I would go with here.
Okay, well, I wholeheartedly enjoy your gumption here. I think you're, and it certainly can be statistically based. I mean, it is a lot of fun to be tied into this, to the Rockies offense. He's a guy that does offer you some speed, offers you plenty of home run ability. He had a fairly sizable injury early on in his career, which sort of seemed to set him back a little bit. But boy, he's really charging right now. And between last year and this year, he was definitely underdrafted this past year in any league that let him slide into the second round, which did happen on occasion for sure. So I don't really have an argument against it. I guess my only... It's a real hard deviation, but I still think – I don't think we've seen the best of Mookie Betts, and I think the pace that Betts is on right now means that this is probably going to be his worst batting average season, but I would not be surprised if Betts is closer to a 315 to 320 hitter next year, and I trust the stability of the Red Sox organization a touch more than I trust the stability of the Rockies. So, I wouldn't have any problem, and I think it's splitting hairs between Betts and Blackmon. So that does not bother me at all.
I could just hear you screaming, like cordwood. They stack them like cordwood.
And they do. I mean, Tapia is up now, and now Desmond has got to play some first base, and which is kind of nice because he'll get first base eligibility for next year. But now Reynolds is playing pretty well, so they're going to have to decide what they're going to do with him. And David Dahl is going to be back. I mean, none of that should affect Blackmon though. So, like I said, I have full respect for you wishing to take Charlie Blackmon with the number 8 pick. That allows me to take the guy who I have at 7 with the number 9 pick, and that guy is one Jose Altuve, aka Mighty Mouse. His power has held up this year. The concept, his speed has been decent, and the concept of him being part of such a young, exuberant lineup that seems to be smashing the ball on a daily basis means that I think this is about the right place to slide Altuve in. He seems to do it sort of quietly. I don't know if it's a Houston market thing or if he's just overshadowed by, the extraordinary long balls that Springer has been hitting or the semi-bounce-back season that we've had out of Carlos Correa. But even though I think it's under-publicized, I think Mookie Betts is a decent bargain and certainly an understandable pick at 9. Agree or disagree?
You mean Altuve? You said Mookie Betts there.
Oh, that's interesting. Sorry.
No, it's cool. I totally agree. It was between him and Blackmon where I took him, and I kind of did Blackmon just to have that, like I said, conversation that we were talking about. But I definitely like where your head's at, and I would approve. So is it my turn?
Well, it is almost your turn, but let's make sure I got this right. As far as whenever I listen to any form of a mock draft, I like to hear it recited multiple times, so I remember where it was. So I took Trout at 1, and you agreed.
Yep.
You took Goldschmidt at 2, and I agreed.
Sure.
I took Harper at 3, and you agreed.
Agree. Yep.
You took Kershaw at 4, and
there was
and I only slightly disagreed. Took Max Scherzer at 5, and you thought I was nuts. And then at 6, you took Anthony Rizzo with the caveat that you're hoping that he ends up second base eligible. But we both had him as a first-round talent regardless. Mm-hmm. So Trout, Goldschmidt, Harper, Kershaw, Scherzer, and Rizzo are the top 6. At 7, I went with one Mookie Betts, believing in a bounce back and believing in his batting average more than we've seen so far this year. At 8, you took Charlie Blackmon, which is certainly understandable. Hooking into the Rockies is never, ever a bad idea. At 9, I took one Mighty Mouse, a.k.a. Jose Altuve. So, to recap the whole thing, Trout, Goldschmidt, Harper, Kershaw, Scherzer, Rizzo, Betts, Blackmon, and Altuve leads us to the 10th pick. So why don't you fire away and tell me where you're leaning here?
Well, with the 10th pick, I feel like we got to start talking about some of these third basemen. This is kind of the area where I'd start to look at this pool of Arenado, Bryant, and then I think Machado's third, if you're kind of talking about third baseman. I think that I am going to go with Nolan Arenado. Part of it might be the Coors bias. Part of it might be the Cubs anti-bias. I think it's just kind of a coin flip there, and Arenado's my guy, so that's who I'll go with.
Okay, and I, once again, love Colorado hitters, so it makes really good sense. And I had a slight difference in opinion, partially, and this could be, although I'm anti-Cub because I'm pro-Brewers, I also was very, very high on Chris Bryant this year, going into the year, and I think he's had a little bit more of a World Series hangover than I hoped he was going to have. He is playing the outfield tonight, since they called up Reimer Candelario. And so, or I don't know how to say his first name. Maybe you can help me with that. But anyway, the point being is that I would take, gladly take Chris Bryant at 11. And think that he's likely to bounce back. And my gut has always told me that he's got a 50 home run season in that bat at some point. You wouldn't know it right now. So once again, I'm taking somebody that I'm hoping for a bounce back. So I'm taking Chris Bryant at 11. Obviously not too far off of what you were thinking, because you said this was the third base area and you even thought about Bryant.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, I'm a Bryant guy. I mean, how could you say no to those blue eyes? But like I said, I think Machado is definitely the third here, and he's not who I would go with next. And I hope I'm not going to step on your toes as far as the pitching thing, but I think did you just get in my head with the lefty at Fenway being a negative thing? Or, like, did we forget Chris Sale was amazing? He's my pick here. I don't really know how you could argue against it. I mean, if you wanted to bet on Bumgarner after the injury or whatever, I don't think that I could fault you. But I love Chris Sale, so he's my pick.
Well, I don't have any arguments whatsoever against Chris Sale here. As a matter of fact, I have him above, well above where we have the draft numbers right now. I have him at 9 overall. I just happen to have Chris Bryant at 8, which we've diverged a little bit, but not all that much. So I don't really have any issues with all the people that were taken in front of him. But there's no way I could pass up Chris Sale here. I think as much as his temperament seems to be an aberration, you know, yeah, he's in control of it enough to be dominant. And again, I do believe that the Red Sox are a team that is likely to bounce back next year from what has been a fairly disappointing year so far in 2017. But now is when I'm going to freak you out. Are you ready?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. So since we got done speaking at 9, we had Nolan Arenado at 10. We had Chris Bryant at 11. We have Chris Sale at 12. And at 13th overall, I am going to take Corey Kluber.
Ooh.
I knew I was going to freak you out. I know Kluber hasn't been real great this year, and he's had a little mini stint on the DL. But in recent times, I think he is by far been the most consistent pitcher that's left on the board. I am somewhat considering the fact that Bumgarner, you know, still has to come back. I know he had his first rehab start last night. Started out in the 88 to 91 range for Madison Bumgarner. But I like Kluber, and I think his, his 12-plus K kind of starts in recent times, and just the general way that he's gone about his business, soft-spoken, took a good deal after he won the Cy Young and has backed it up. I like the offense, relatively speaking, behind him. And I think for an American League division, you want to hook into the American League Central, because next year it's going to be really interesting to watch Chesler Cuthbert try to hit cleanup for the Royals, see what's left of the flamed out carcass of the Chicago White Sox. I think he's in a good spot. When you pitch in the AL Central and you don't have to pitch to the Indians, and Lord only knows what's going to happen to the Tigers. The Tigers could sell everything that's not bolted down this year too. So my point being is that this is probably where I would vary the most from consensus, but I don't have any problem rating Corey Kluber way up at 13, because I don't trust anyone else having been burnt to a crisp by Madison Bumgarner this year.
Right.
So now you are more than welcome to tell me which brand of hallucinogen you believe I'm on.
I don't know. You seem pretty lucid. So, and not that kind of lucid. Things I would say about Corey Kluber. He had the same kind of first inning woes that he's shown throughout his career. I know a lot of people want to attribute that to the long playoff run that the Indians had last year. He's been phenomenal as of late. I since he's come back from the DL. I mean, I like him. I have him in a couple like dynasty spots, but holy man, at 13, I don't think I've got the balls to go for that. I appreciate the boldness, but, and gosh, I'm kind of looking at these pitchers and seeing like who I would have. I don't have a pitcher right now, so maybe that'll give me some time to look at it. If we're going to skip ahead to the guy since it is my pick, I'm going to go with Trey Turner here. I'm still on the bandwagon. I think that the speed is elite, and if you're going to get yourself a rabbit, you may as well get one that is going to, you know, provide you a little bit of pop. He actually is a barely a net positive on the player rater as far as power is concerned. But if you sort by stolen bases, you have to go all the way down to Keon Broxton and Paul Goldschmidt at 12 and 13 in the stolen base kind of output to get anything in the power department. And I mean, Turner's already, shown to be more elite with the steals. You can't argue with that lineup, can't argue with the position. And I think I'm going to be back on the Trey Turner train. Try saying that three times fast.
All right. Well, I had Turner at 18, which I thought was going to be relatively high. But I have suspected that people were going to get back on Trey Turner. So you liking him this much does not surprise me. Elite speed with enough power potential to not hurt you is definitely puts you in a special category of things you've accomplished early in the draft. So I have very little problems with it. I did like the more flexibility that he offered this year versus what I think he's going to offer next year, which will be just shortstop. But then again, if he had to keep one spot, shortstop is it, because if any of the positions around the diamond have been disappointing this year, it's definitely shortstop, which is one of the things, if you go back about 10 episodes or, 8 or 10 weeks ago, I was telling everyone that people were going to be very disappointed overall in shortstop as a position.
I mean, you look at just real quick on the shortstop leaderboard. So behind Turner, you've got Elvis Andrus, who I don't think anybody buys because he had that weird power stretch. Correa, who was up top. Seager's hurt. Bogaerts has bounced back, but then you're looking at Eduardo Nunez, Chris Owings, Andrelton Simmons, Zach Cozart, and then you get down to like, okay, Gene Segura was supposed to be good. Where the heck is Francisco Lindor? So I think that, you know, we were kind of right as far as the shortstop shelf this year.
Yeah, we certainly were. And so I don't have a good argument against Trey Turner there. I like him a lot. And this would be the point where I would be cussing under my breath because I was hoping that he was going to last long enough for me to get him in the second round. And it didn't happen. That's why I want to draft with people who are dumb. And I don't want to draft with Evan all that frequently. Okay, at number 15, my highest player left on the board now is Manny Machado. And again, I feel like I keep going to this well of people that I think are better than they've played. And Machado is definitely one of those guys. He used to be shortstop eligible, and he might be again with the stuff that's happened to Hardy this year. He may have a shot yet at being shortstop eligible. But Manny Machado is a rare talent, and I would have a hard time passing on him here. He's another guy I think is going to have a 40 home run plus season very soon, if not 45 to 50 home runs. And I love having somebody in the middle of that Orioles lineup, which I think is going to be due to bounce back next year when they're looking for guys like, you know, Trumbo to bounce back and Chris Davis to bounce back and Adam Jones stay his steady self, etc. So I think he plays in the right division, plays in the right parks, and I would not be afraid to pull the trigger on Manny Machado at 15. Agree or disagree?
Agree. Definitely agree. Okay. At this point, man, I want to be bold, but I can't go that far. I'll say Joey Votto, who has still been a very solid producer. The Reds kind of as an overall have outperformed what I think people would have expected them to do. But Votto has 20 jacks. He's hitting over 300, on pace to go over 100 and run an RBI. He's still just a solid performer. And until he shows me otherwise, I mean, at this point, you'd have to draft him over like a Miguel Cabrera. I don't want to leak the name that I was thinking, although you probably have it. Joey Votto, agree, disagree.
I don't struggle with it at all. It seems like he's slowed down a little bit on power in recent weeks. And he is a guy whose swing can get a little wonky at times. But he is one of the most pleasurable people in fantasy baseball to own because he plays in the wonderful home environment, etc. So there's a lot to like about Joey Votto. I had him at 17. And I think the surprise that we're about to have is that at pick 17, I'm going to take the guy that I had at 14 overall, and that's one Freddie Freeman. I think that's probably who you were thinking of, but I don't know that for sure. My thoughts on Freeman are that he's really shown a ton of progress in recent years, and having recently watched the Brewers play at SunTrust, it seems like left-handed hitters hitting the ball off the bat is like throwing the ball out of a rocket launcher. And I do believe that offensive environment's going to hold. And I think that Freddie Freeman is the right pick at 17. He's the guy with the most upside. Had he not gotten hurt, we would be talking about him right now as a possible National League MVP candidate.
Very true.
And if he adds third base eligibility, which we haven't talked about yet, Evan, how crazy do you think that possibility is?
I was so shocked that that's what you slow played. Like, you're talking about the lefties, you know, in SunTrust, and you're not talking about Big City Matt Adams, who's the guy that's pushing him over to the hot corner.
Yeah, well, a number of people think that they're trying to flip Matt Adams. I don't really see it that way. But they have been a difficult organization to figure out, trading for youngsters while acquiring you know, the likes of Matt Kemp and, you know, to a lesser extent, Matt Adams, but, you know, some older players, Kurt Suzuki, et cetera, and so forth. So they haven't been very easy to figure out. But at the same time, I'm okay with Freddie Freeman at 17. I'd be pretty elated with that. And like I said, I have him at 14 overall. So who would you like at 18?
Well, I mean, just I know we kind of have time constraints and whatnot. Can we talk about Freddie Freeman for 2 minutes?
Absolutely.
And like, I agree with what you're saying, that this just seems like a big smokescreen and being like, man, Matt Adams is just so good. How can we take him out of the lineup? We got to move our MVP across the diamond and, you know, give this guy a spot. Like, what are you playing him for? You're not going to the playoffs. Of course he's getting shipped out. Nobody's buying it whatsoever. But if Freeman's going to pick up third base eligibility and Machado doesn't run anymore, I know I've been public about Freddie Freeman's 30 home run power if he's healthy and how wrong I probably would have been on that. I could see a scenario where I'm drafting Freddie Freeman over Manny Machado if Freeman has third base eligibility going into next year.
No issues with that. I definitely see that.
I thought I was going to get a little pushback there.
Nope. And I think it's easy for people to forget how incredible Freddie Freeman was before he got hurt. So, you know, we'll have enough time the rest of the year to see if he's healthy. I won't have enough time before my three sport league, but regardless of all that. So I'm quite curious. Tell me who you'd take at 18. And then after that, I'll try and do a rehash of who we've taken lately so people can jot it down if they want.
Well, it's about time for a reach. We haven't had a reach in a while. Cody Bellinger. I'm doing it. This kid is out of his mind. Every time I turn around, he's on base. He's hitting a ball over the fence. I mean, even if you take 10 home runs off of what he's done and you project it out like over the year, he's a 30 home run threat. I mean, I know you might look at like, oh, Miguel Cabrera or whatnot. God, it's hard not to like Cody Bellinger. I'm sorry. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, wearing the Nikes, and I'm going down with the ship.
Wow.
I'd do it. I'd do it too.
And I have, you know, I have Cody Bellinger. We're only doing two rounds of this draft. I have Cody Bellinger as a draftable commodity. But when I say wow, I'm saying wow more so over people that you're passing up on this list that I like a little bit more so than anything. Bellinger certainly looks like he's going to be a special, special talent. I would still like to see some a little longer sustenance of the batting average before I went quite as in as you are. It doesn't surprise me. These stretches where a guy just completely carries your offense really, really moves people up draft boards, and that part does not stun me. I believe the last time that we rehashed, we got through 11, which was Chris Bryant. At 12, we have Chris Sale. At 13, we took Corey Kluber, which was a surprise pick to many. At 14, we took Trey Turner. At 15, we took Manny Machado. 16 was Joey Votto. 17 was Freddie Freeman, which I think will surprise the masses a bit. And at 18 is Cody Bellinger, I think is, I have it like 4 or 5 picks too early. But is certainly understandable with as excellent as he's been. And I can't believe how incredible the Dodger offense has been overall as well. Well, at 19, people who listen to both the podcasts will not be surprised at all. At 19, I would take Aaron Judge. Judge has persevered as far as his batting average has stayed decent. He does have a handful of steals. He plays in an incredible park for power, especially since he's willing to and has shown off his ability to go the other way. And between Judge and Bellinger, I'm pretty far on the Bellinger side because despite what we've seen so far, I still think if one person was to hit, you know, 55 plus home runs, it's Judge and it's not Bellinger. So we definitely differ on that. So how crazy do you feel Aaron Judge is at pick 19?
I mean, I know we've talked about it. He's another guy. He just keeps hitting, and I don't understand, like, how you can – I mean, you look at him, and I guess you just have to say regression, but I mean, that's skills that I would absolutely put my money on, and that's essentially what it is. And you're talking about me going four picks up on Bellinger. If you're going to do it and you're a guy that's in this, you know, kind of second – or however you want to drive it, the second third of the draft, which I know is kind of confusing and makes absolutely no sense, but of the second round, he's probably not going to be there until the third round. Just go get him and do that. And that's what I think you're going to have to do with Judge. And like we talked about, I think there's going to be the Yankee fan that does it. You just have to believe in the power. I don't know how anybody could look at it. I mean, you were talking about the opposite field power last week. I love him. I love Judge. And, if we're going to continue in the outfield, another guy that we did kind of touch on, George Springer. And I know there's concerns with, you know, him not running whatsoever. I don't really care. He's already popped 22 home runs. While I don't think a 40 home run pace is sustainable, I mean, I think we've kind of expected him to be a plus power guy. I don't know, you know, Carlos Beltran leaving the Astros next year isn't really going to kill him all that much. I think they're going to have a pretty solid lineup going forward if you're talking about this kind of three-sport prospecting and whatnot. And I imagine I'm going to get some hate for this pick, but I am a pro Springer guy, and I love him.
Well, George Springer is really coming on strong, and you're right. I think the disappointing thing to fantasy owners so far is his lack of stolen bases as a professional, which we, you know, he certainly raked. He racked up steals and homers as a minor league player. I don't know how to argue against trying to hook into the Astros offense with where it is, and they're young and talented, and they're young and cocky, and I don't blame them. They, as far as I'm concerned, they definitely deserve to be. It is the first person that I didn't have in my first two rounds, but I did have three people listed in my honorable mention list, and George Springer was on that. So I'm not too taken aback by George Springer at pick 20. At 21, I cannot imagine being more giddy about one of my favorite players in Major League Baseball having fallen. I just said falled, by the way. Another English major moment. Having fallen to me at 21 when I had him right behind Judge. So I had him at 15 overall. And that is one Carlos Correa.
Yeah.
I do think this is time for Correa to go off the board. As a matter of fact, I think there's a pretty dramatic fall off after this, and I'll be really curious to see who Evan goes with after this. But Correa, you know, you're looking at a, you know, easily sub 24-year-old shortstop who's raking, and he's in the middle of a great lineup, and he's not really hurting you in any categories going forward. And I don't think we've really started to come close to seeing how good he can be. You agree with me on Correa?
Oh, no, I'm definitely. And that's where I was going to be going. And you could say that, you know, some of these, like the Bellinger and, you know, things like that, they might be, you know, kind of reaches. We're kind of projecting out. Correa probably might have deserved to go in that range. I'm definitely down, like you were saying, getting part of the Astros. And you were definitely hitting on where I was going to go to next. As far as, I mean, I don't care that he's kind of hurt right now. I really love what we've seen from Corey Seager so far this year. I think, you know, this Dodgers team just keeps pumping talent. I mean, where the hell did Chris Taylor come from? Why did that become a thing? Like, they just find these guys everywhere and they keep producing. And, you know, you talk about the drop off at shortstop. I think Seager still provides you with, you know, pretty much what Carlos Correa does. And, you know, at the same price, I'd be just as happy to get him there.
Yeah. And the thing about Seager here is that now you're to the point where, in the draft, where if you want to get an elite shortstop, that's the one you have to take. I do think he's going to bounce back. I did have him as going in the first two rounds, but I had him behind some people. And we are to the point in the draft where I'm going to get the biggest eye roll in the history of mankind from from one Evan. Evan, from the chat room, do you know who I'm taking at 23?
No, I got my ass kicked at work today. I literally did not pay attention at all. So lay it on me and you'll get my eye roll in person.
All right. Well, in recent weeks, we've been over this. And at 23, I would take Daniel Murphy.
Oh, okay.
You know, with the hopes that I don't think he's going to have multi-eligibility going into next year, but I think he could very well become somebody who has second base and first base eligibility next year. As far as I'm concerned, Daniel Murphy is, you know, the pinnacle of Joe Mauer's career, but a second baseman instead of a catcher. So he has more, he gets all the plate appearances to hold up your batting average. He's hitting .342 right now. He's in the teens for home runs. He's going to score a ton. He's going to knock in a ton. I think people are vastly underrating Daniel Murphy, and I would have no problems whatsoever taking Daniel Murphy at 23 overall. I've been over this before. Everyone said last year was an aberration. He'll never hit like that again. Well, he's hitting every single game. He had a 10 or 11 game stretch recently where he had an extra base hit in every single game. His bat to ball skills have always been elite, and I'm pro Daniel Murphy within the top 25. And Evan can rip me apart now. Go ahead.
I can't. And he was a guy that I figured you may take in this exercise. He was a guy that I probably would have figured, you know, as a throw-in pick, maybe to make you just a little bit happy, maybe because he actually is that good. But I think he does. Kind of deserve to go in this exercise, and I have no problem with it. You didn't get as much of an eye roll from me in the like, oh, you're wrong. It was more of like, oh, Chuck's talking about Daniel Murphy again.
Well, interestingly enough, and to put it in context, for the reason I was so surprised is that within the chat room conversations, I've had multiple people tell me that he's a fifth or a sixth round pick next year. And he's not going to be a fifth or a sixth round pick in any draft that I'm in, because if I ever get him late in the third or early in the fourth, I will be absolutely elated, because I don't have much doubt about his skill at this point. So, but I'm the leader of the Daniel Murphy train. So now I think these last couple picks are going to be a little dicier, a little more interesting. So why don't you fire away? Who would you take at pick 24?
Man, this is hard. I can't. Okay. And this isn't, do you have is there a pitcher that's lined up anywhere close for you right now? Because this is what I'm struggling to wrap my brain around with, is like, you took Kluber at 13. Who the hell else is there out there for pitching, like, that you feel comfortable in, like, or that you would want to anchor your team around at all? It's horrible.
Well, I mean, I know this is pinning my hopes to one rehab outing, but the only other pitcher that I have listed, even an honorable mention, is Bumgarner. Now, I'm a little surprised. I've seen some people have you could make an argument for either Keuchel or McCullers off of the Astros.
That was the other name I was going to throw out there, and I thought that was, I mean, second round, crazy. Third round on Lance McCullers. Like, let me take your temperature and we'll take it, you know. I'm not even going to say take it through the mouth, because that's still kind of disgusting. Lance McCullers, talk to me, Chuck.
Yeah, I'm not there on Lance McCullers. With injury history, all things considered, if right up to the R3 sport draft, right up to it, if Berríos is pitching like he's pitching now, I think I would rather gamble on Berríos than gamble on McCullers' health.
Not in the second round. You're just talking about overall.
I'm talking about overall. And there's no McCullers in the second round for me. If I had to take a pitcher here, I would be taking Madison Bumgarner.
Well, no. Bumgarner completely slipped my mind. So that's just
okay.
Not even fair. No.
Is that who you'd want to take at 24?
Yes, absolutely.
Something else.
No. It was just one of the – I mean, do you see any – and I know we're prognosticating and whatever other fancy word, since you're the English major, you know, we're forecasting here. the injury for Bumgarner going forward?
With him already being almost back up to velocity in his first start, with him being especially skilled, I wouldn't be, you know, and being a crafty lefty, throws like this wraparound pitch that's just crazy. I'm not overly concerned about Bumgarner, and I still love his home digs for a left-handed pitcher. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't have a lot of concerns about it. I'm guardedly optimistic, which is one step above cautiously optimistic. I don't fear he's been, you know, he's coming back ahead of schedule, which is kind of nice as long as he doesn't have a setback. I do think that the Giants will have a tendency to bounce back somewhat next year. So I concur. Bumgarner at 24, I don't have any problems with at all. Okay, how about at 25 for me? And boy, I'm struggling at multiple levels. This is where it's starting to get tough already, which I really think is part of the fun. Assuming that I see continued health like I've seen, I have one of two players that I think has to go here. And that person that I would take at 25, which I guess we've gotten into the third round, so you only have to do one more pick after this, and I'll be curious to see if it's the same one. But at 25, I'd be willing to pull the trigger on Josh Donaldson. I do think there's some severe delineation as you start to get down in third baseman. And Josh Donaldson is a guy who's been an elite player for most of the last, 2.5 years. So I'm really curious if you're okay with Donaldson here. And I'm even more curious as to who you're going to take in the second pick of the third round. Are you okay with Josh Donaldson at this point in the draft?
It's an interesting name that you throw out, because as I'm kind of looking at these guys that, you know, I may kind of want, the name that kept kind of floating across my lists here was Miguel Sano. And then as far as, like, if it's an OBP league, I mean, because I don't think we're really buying into the 280 that Sano's hitting this year. I just love his power. I think that, you know, we've been waiting for a 30 home run season from Sano. I think it's coming this year. I think 35 to 40 is coming next year. I've talked about before, I don't care if he strikes out, because when he puts the bat on the ball, it's going literally a country mile plus a couple feet. And I love him. And it's Miguel Sano for me.
Well, I don't blame you for it. I have some illogical concerns about Sano, and I love him, and I own him in a couple of keeper leagues that I am going to be holding on to him dearly, because I have him at really good prices. And I don't mind overall the Sano over Donaldson. I do think that if they put something back together in Toronto, that there's a lot more upside in the lineup around Donaldson. But Donaldson's an older player already, and I like guys who used to be in the top five or six picks that start to fall, and that's one of the reasons that I like Donaldson. And I think this is paying for the best that Sano could be at this point in his career. I mean, he made a huge jump this year, so I wouldn't hate the Sano pick, but I will stand behind the fact that I was okay with Donaldson here. Okay, so doing a little recap for us, we'll go back to, I'll just do the whole thing. It went Trout, Goldschmidt, and Harper, followed by Kershaw, followed by Scherzer. After Scherzer went Rizzo with the second base caveat. Then at 7 went Mookie Betts. At 8 went Charlie Blackmon. At 9 went Jose Altuve. At 10 went Nolan Arenado. At 11 went Chris Bryant. At 12, let's make sure I got this numbered right.
Chris Sale.
Thank you. I missed it. 12, we have Chris Sale. At 13, we have Corey Kluber, which I think was one of the shocker picks of the draft. But I still, as I look at this landscape, I understand the want to get Kluber at 13 before the drop-off happens. 14, we have Trey Turner, which was astutely taken by Evan out from under my nose. At 15, we have Manny Machado. 16, we have Joey Votto. Which I thought I was high on Joey Votto a couple picks after that. But Evan reconfirmed my belief by taking him at 16. At 17, I had Freddie Freeman, believing in the recovery, believing in that ballpark. At 18, maybe the full shocker of the draft, Cody Bellinger, buying the Kool-Aid, as Evan says. Cody Bellinger.
And wearing the Nikes. Don't forget the Nikes.
the young slugger extraordinaire who is making his way into the heart of every Dodger fan as we speak. At 19, I took Aaron Judge. You know, the all rise for Aaron Judge. At 19, I still think in a lot of drafts he'll go higher than that, but I could be wrong. Then, let's see, at 20, did I skip a number?
Judge Springer.
Oh, yeah, there he is. George Springer, the only person who went kind of off the board for me. Boy, he's surging right now, so I can see it. George Springer went at 20. At 21, I took Carlos Correa, which I do think, you know, it takes a really offensive outbreak to make a talent like Correa fall to 21, but all the picks above him seem to be pretty legit. At 22, we have Corey Seager, who has been hitting home runs in bunches lately, is a little dinged up. But you know, you got to love the talent and you love the bounce back in the junior season for sure. At 23, I took Daniel Murphy. I am the poster boy for Daniel Murphy not lasting too long because I think he is, as long as he's healthy, I think he is about as much safety as you can possibly get in a pick. At 24, we have Madison Bumgarner. There's just such a drop-off after that, and we talked about it extensively, which I thought was good podcasting. At 25, I took Josh Donaldson. At 26, we have Mr. Insignificant of the first two rounds and two picks, and that's Miguel Sano, which is a pick I also understand. I'm counting on some bounce backs from players more so in this draft than Evan is. The only people I had listed who did not get taken, I had Nelson Cruz on my list and I had Robinson Cano on my list, which those are two guys that seemed to last too long in almost every draft this past season. So I don't know why next season would be any different.
That's I mean, Cano is definitely a name that I could see kind of throwing around towards the end here. Do you have Cruz over Cano? I'm just curious, since you actually, like, you know, thought this out and ranked your guys.
I do have Cruz over Cano. I'm very much, I hate trying to draft outfield depth. And so I really try to get an anchor in my outfield. I've wound up with one or two too many teams in my day where my first outfielder should sort of be a late second, early third outfielder. And then I'm trying to get a conglomeration of guys that are sort of, you know, all starting to play over their head, which I don't like. So I really try to anchor my outfield more than most people. And I like the depth at second base a little better than I like the depth at outfield when you consider how many more outfielders you need to draft. So I certainly understand Cano in front of Cruz, but I would prefer Cruz, who's always, always, always underdrafted because, you know, he had some drug issues when he was in the Brewer system, and that's part of what got him dealt, and he started his career late, but he's been an amazing player, and he's got a great nickname in Boomstick. So,
yeah, and he's amazing when he doesn't have to play the field because that was kind of a knock on him when he was with the Rangers, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and he was never really a great outfielder. I should check and see how many games he has in the outfield because that would be one thing that would be a deal breaker for me because I'm not a guy who loves to draft straight DHs.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could actually look that here. I'll tell you what. I will look that up if you do me a favor. What World Series am I thinking of when he was out in right field and they were up like 3-1 when he played for the Rangers and the ball went directly over his head and then they went on to absolutely blow that series?
If you want me to come up with a year, we're in trouble, but it was definitely against St. Louis.
That's what I was thinking. And yeah. I mean, you don't have to do the year, but I mean, that was okay. Definitely. Do you remember what I'm talking about though?
I do. And that was Ron Washington. Ron Washington was still their coach then. And I believe the following year, it came out that he had had the cocaine problems or whatever. And that changed Ron Washington's career, although he's still in baseball. So I guess
he's with the Braves, isn't he?
Yep. So it is what it is. We did have another topic lined up, but boy, we went long on this topic, which was okay because I thought it was kind of an interesting thing. I will post on Twitter in increments how our mock draft went tonight, so people can review that if they want to follow us. And go ahead and give your Twitter details and tell us if you're working on anything besides the usual, and we'll go from there.
I thought you were looking for some Nelson Cruz statistics. He started 2 games in the outfield. They were both at Colorado, so who knows for that outfield eligibility next year. As far as where you can find me on the Twitter machine, at EvFWFB. I mean, it'd be awesome if I was cranking out stats like Joe Ross's home runs the first time through the lineup or whatnot. But there's a lot going on and a lot of beer to be drank and just a lot of sports to digest. So catch me here. Catch me on the football podcast. And I'm not going to say catch me outside. I caught myself before I did such stupid things. And thank you, Chuck, for being here to guide us along without Benjamin.
Yeah, it's not an easy task and not one that we embrace, so we want him to get back to being healthy. I am Chuck Anderson. I am at Just Chucking It. I'm glad that Evan and I could throw out some podcasting goodness for you. And the earliest mock draft you could imagine for next season is in the books. I thought it was an interesting conversation, and it does sort of get your mind going on what kind of value there is going to be for keepers at the various positions towards the top of the draft and all those shallow keeper leagues that are out there. As I'm putting out an of note column every single week for FWFB, it has been taken too graciously. They gave me my own tab. Evan, they gave me my own tab. Who would have ever thought it? My mom would be so proud if she had any idea about any of these things. Because she's still around.
So you are like a king of your own tab fair renaissance thing, right?
Exactly. But now, unfortunately, that means I can track how many times, people are going there to actually read just my stuff, which is, which is hard to say because I have a bunch of buddies that listen to all my podcasts, which I appreciate greatly, Jim Sitzberger and Dave Zimmerman especially. But at the same time, I don't think they like to read all that much because, not that they can't because they can. They're sharp people, but they don't like to take the time to read. So, but anyway, on occasion, they've read some that I put on Facebook, etc. So anyway, follow me and you'll see the links to the Of Note, which is only like, is always a 5 to 6 paragraph kind of read. It's not overly lengthy, but covers a lot of area. And one of the things we were going to talk about tonight will be in there. That would be the lack of pop-up catchers, meaning that in recent years, guys have sort of come out from the woodwork. And this year, there hasn't been very many because Alex Avila and Mike Zanino, who's already starting to regress, don't necessarily enthuse me as a full-blown crop of catchers coming from nowhere to leap things up. Although you could go with Robinson Chirinos, which gets to my point, because he should not be better than Lucroy, but on paper or in fantasy, he might be. But anyway, so thanks everyone for putting up with our shenanigans. Give us a review on iTunes or on Stitcher, wherever you filter us through. Put us on auto download and get us into your heads, and you'll have a chance to be as screwed up as we are. So anyway, thanks for everything. We appreciate it, and we will be back at you as a group with our fearless leader,